Hi, folks. This is CBD of the Cut Jib Newsletter Worldwide Podcasting Network. I'm here in, believe it or not, sunny New Jersey. And my friend and co-podicator, JJ Sefton, is hopefully sunny Wisconsin. We have a special guest. We have a gentleman named Jeff Carter, who is running for treasurer of the state of Nevada. We were lucky enough to arrange this podcast with him through Buck Throckmorton, who is a, as many of you know, he is a writer at Ace of Spades and at other places on the internet. Jeff Carter is one of the, what I hope to be the prototypical candidate. And that is that he is coming from the private sector after a successful career, and he is entering public service. That is what we need in this country. And I think that the abject failure of the professional politician that we see every time we open the newspaper is evidence of that. At any rate, Jeff, how are you doing? Maybe you can introduce Mr. Carter for us.
Well,
go ahead,
Jeff
JJ.
Carter, it's JJ Sefton here.
Oh,
I will introduce Jeff
Sorry
Carter,
about that.
Our very, that's quite all right, our very special guest. I know we welcome you, and you know, it certainly is a relief from hearing CBD and I drone on incessantly about the state of affairs, and among them is the sorry state of, unfortunately, the GOP, which we are glad that someone like you is a refreshing change of pace and hopefully a harbinger of things to come going forward, not only for this election, but elections in the future for a party that we must take control of if we are to have any chance of taking the country back from the maniacs that are both in the Democrats and their go along to get along flunkies in the GOPE. So welcome, Jeff Carter.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I have listened to this podcast for a long time. I've been a contributor at Ace of Spades in the comments section going back to, 2007 or something like that. It's a very snarky blog, but it's on point and funny. And I agree with you. I think career politicians are absolutely the bane of America, and it doesn't really matter which party they're in. That's one of the reasons I'm running. There's a lot of reasons that I'm running, but you know, nobody becomes a career politician at age 64. That's for sure.
Well, maybe that's a good idea. You know, you've obviously had a successful career. You're not hopefully in it for the money. So
no.
Maybe you are in fact in it for the public service. And I know
am.
That you're not going to be around in, you know, in 30 years, 40 years, hanging on to your Senate seat.
No.
So.
Me and Strom Thurmond.
Yeah.
One time, you know, when I was on this at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, I was on the board of directors, and I was also a director of CME PAC. And we used to go talk to politicians in Washington about issues all the time. One time I was down in the Senate thing, waiting for the train, you know, that goes back and forth. And off comes Strom Thurmond with two aides holding him up. And he was desperately moving his feet to try to touch the ground, but he couldn't stand up on his own. He was, I think, 99 years old at the time. And I was like, holy cow, is that really what we got going on here? I mean, you couldn't talk to Strom Thurmond about issues, right? He was in his cot in his office most of the time. And not to denigrate Strom, but I just think career politicians are a terrible thing. We have them in the Republican Party. We have them in the Democrat Party. It turns out the guy I'm running against, I don't mean to demean him, but he's run for office twice and he's been rejected by voters twice. And he has basically no resume for the job that I'm running for. So I'm not in it for the money. That's obvious. I think the treasurer makes $120,000 a year, which can be a lot of money, but, to some people, but to, It's not about the money. It's about the service, and it's about doing
when we
what's
say,
right
when
for
we
the
say
man.
Not right, when we say you're not in it for the money, it's that most politicians, like a Nancy Pelosi or a Titicaca Ocasio-Cortez, they you know, that's not salary that they make their money. I mean, Pelosi comes into Congress, what, she's worth what, $300,000? She's now worth what, 30, 40 million? Who the hell knows how much she's worth?
Yeah, right.
Crooked mafioso husband. I mean, who the hell knows? I mean, It's crazy. They go in for the grift and the graft, and that's what they, and that's how it happens, and
You're
that's all
absolutely
of it.
right. You're absolutely right. And, I grew up in Illinois, which is probably, you guys might disagree because one of you is in New Jersey, but I think Illinois is probably the most corrupt state in the country when it comes to politicians. And everybody is kind of a grifter, it feels like, on the Democratic Party. And then, of course, we have some on the Republican side. And it's just really disgusting to me as a taxpayer.
Well, by
Absolutely.
the way, I will disagree with you. I think that New Jersey is the most corrupt state in the nation, but it's not a fight that I want to win.
Exactly.
One of the things that I think is vitally important for the United States of America to understand is that the nature of government is corruption. I don't think that it is possible to create government that is free of corruption. So the goal should be limited government. Now that sounds great, but when we look at the unbelievable corruption that we have uncovered in Minnesota, in Ohio, in California, and obviously probably in the other 47 states, I think it backs me up that we will never get rid of corruption, but we need to shrink government so that the corruption is limited. Now, my question to you is, and by the way, folks, he said that he's not going to denigrate his opponent, but I will. I looked at the guy's CV, and there he has done a lot of stuff with nonprofits and committees and so on and so forth. But it's very, very light on actual work done that created value for America. And I think, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, like it's vitally important that people from private industry, from the private sector, enter politics and fix what they can. And Drew Johnson, Jeff Carter's opponent, I don't think has the capacity to fix what is ailing Nevada.
No, he doesn't. And I agree with you. I think the founders would agree with you. If you look at their language in the Federalist Papers and in the Constitution, they were for limited government. I think Milton Friedman would agree with you. I think Hayek would agree with you. If you're a classical economist, for sure, the Federalist Society would agree with you, and I agree with you. I think people that get into politics at a young age look at themselves as this is a career. That's what my opponent did. My opponents on the Democratic side, same thing. For me, it was kind of a revelation. So I always was interested in politics, obviously. It affected me and what I did. I traded 25 years at the Mercantile Exchange interest rate futures, and that's kind of what a big part of the treasurer's job actually in Nevada is. You manage a $12 billion portfolio, and it's all kind of on the yield curve. And you have to know the difference between a coupon and a yield and maturity and duration and all kinds of the technical things that are from finance. And my opponent just doesn't. And that's not negative. That's just the difference between us. He is a policy wonk. He's never done anything in his life where, when I was trading, I was the reason that people could have 30-year mortgages. So what happened in those markets was banks would write 30-year mortgages, and they needed a place to hedge their risk, and they dumped it off on me, and I managed that risk, and so we created huge value for Americans. I think if you look at the spreads between the bid-ask spread in treasuries before 1973, when the bond contract was introduced, and after, they were used to be 10, 15 points wide, and now they're a tick wide. So you're talking about saving billions of dollars for American taxpayers, especially when you think about the debt load that we have. And so what happened with me was I moved to Nevada from Illinois. I love Nevada. It's a great place. It really truly is. And I was sitting on the couch when Charlie Kirk was murdered, and I said, look, I can't just sit on my hands anymore. I wrote checks to candidates. I knocked on doors for candidates. But this is the one chance for me to get involved. The treasurer's office is very technical office. It's very prescribed by the state legislature and the Constitution what you do. And so my question to people always is, hey, attorney generals have to have a law degree, why shouldn't treasurers have to have a finance degree or some exposure to finance in their life, demonstrable skills? And people buy that. And then when you look around the country, you talked about fraud. Well, career politicians aren't going to get rid of fraud, but business people are, because it's so, they just understand how terrible it is. You never run a business that way. And so government watchdogs bark a lot, but then they go back to their kennel and they sit and they wait for their master to bring them food. Business people get stuff done. You know what I mean? And you see it with Trump. And the other thing that I look at is, I look at Scott Bessent. I mean, we traded some of the same markets. He did it on a different scale than I did, but Bessent's a markets guy. And I think he's the best Treasury Secretary in my lifetime. And
I have to jump in. You are 100% correct. First of all, the man is brilliant.
Right.
He is quicker. He's simply quicker on his feet than any of the people who try to interview him. So it's not even fair when they interview him.
Yeah.
But he is a very, very intelligent man with a clear sense of how the financial future of America should be going. And he is fantastic. I'm very
he's
glad
wonderful.
That you like him.
I love him. And so I'd love to meet him someday, because I'm sure we could swap stories about the Thai bot and stuff like that. But he's a great markets guy, and he's really the first market participant that I can think of, true market participant, that's been a Treasury Secretary. And in Nevada here, you know, we've got a Republican governor who's been really strong. His veto pen was used more, I think, than any other governor in the state, because we're gerrymandered Democrat. And so they sent him a bunch of bad bills, and he needs a strong ticket in a midterm election to get people to turn out. And wouldn't it be great to have a markets guy as the treasurer of Nevada? And that's me. Nobody else has ever participated in markets. They're not, I mean, not to demean them or anything, but they're not even accredited investors. They couldn't even invest in things like hedge funds or exotic things. Not that you would do that as a treasurer, but it goes to your expertise and your understanding of the entire marketplace.
I was going to just interject and say Nevada is one of those, it sort of obviously has this reputation, you know, whether through the culture or wherever, because of the influence of Las Vegas and gambling,
sure,
and so on and so forth. And we'll leave it at that. But I mean, it's just, you know, and of course, Harry Reid, when he was, you talk about someone who entered politics with like not a pot to piss in, and who left office, you know, toes curled up, worth like hundreds, tens of millions of dollars from his land deals.
Yep.
So that's just, it's just, you know, it's amazing that, you know, I'm surprised that Nevada has, actually, because of obviously the union influence, especially the gaming industry, Nevada actually does have a Republican governor, and he's able to sort of quash for the moment the evil that comes out of the legislature there from the Democrats. So yes, it would be a wonderful thing if we can turn the tide there. And because it's a terrific state. I mean, when I lived in California, I visited quite often. Obviously, you know, I'm not a gambler, but have visited Vegas and been elsewhere, and had an enjoyable time there. And people who live there enjoy living there. And it is a great state. So hopefully we can turn the tide.
One of the things about Nevada that many, many people don't understand is it's actually gorgeous. It's not just, you know, Las Vegas out in the desert, you know, 115 degrees. It's got mountains. It's got these incredible vast plains that I personally love driving across. The Nevada side of the Sierra Nevada is gorgeous.
So you can't believe it. So I've been around this state, I think, four times, and I'm going to be around it two more times in the next 2 weeks. Nevada is the most mountainous state in the country. Believe
really?
It or not. Yeah. And if you get up, it's funny. We moved to Las Vegas because I had a venture capital fund and I needed an airport to fly places. I had a company in London, company in Ireland, San Francisco, blah, blah, blah. But I took my wife for the first time up to Minden and Gardnerville and Carson City. And she's like, man, this is absolutely gorgeous. But you get to the other side of the state in Elko and look at the Ruby Mountains. I mean, it's beautiful there. It's Winnemucca's beautiful. Churchill County is beautiful. It's just a very rugged state as well. We have an entire Basque population on the northern part of the state. Nevada has the best lamb in the United States. I'm going to have some tomorrow night at Louis Basque in Reno, but it's really cool when you go around and the dichotomy. So you've kind of got this thing going on in Clark County where Las Vegas is, and you get out of it and it's different. The
I
state's
have to say
totally
that
different.
that is an ethnicity that the last thing I expected the United States to have with, I mean, yeah, the odd Bosco living here, sure, but that actually has a community of expat people from the Basque region of France and Spain. That's fascinating. Yes, the cuisine is amazing.
And the state drinks the pecan punch. So it's amazing when you get around and you get out. And the other thing is you don't have to gamble to love Nevada. It's one of the best outdoor states in the country, which is kind of why we moved here. We love the outdoors and the hiking's amazing. There's a lot to do. My brother-in-law moved from Alaska to Lyon County. Smith Valley is where he lives, and they just love it. And they lived in Alaska for 30 years, so it's a really cool place. That being said, it's a purple state, and it's gerrymandered Democrat, and that's what people have to understand. The prior Democrat governor gerrymandered a map as bad as Illinois's, as bad as Maryland's, as bad as Virginia tried to do. And we're fighting that. And we have a real chance this time to pick up three Senate seats, which would flip control back to the Republicans. We probably can't get the assembly unless it's just crazy, but we can flip some assembly seats, but we need a good ticket. We need a good ticket. And we have three constitutional officers right now that are Republican. Both our senators in Washington are Democrat. And the attorney general, the secretary of state are, and the treasurer, the current treasurer who's running for attorney general, are Democrats. So it's split. And so if we can get control of the executive branch, we can root out fraud. We can, we're one of the only states that doesn't have an inspector general. I think the other one is Minnesota, and you saw
Oh,
what happened there.
what a surprise.
So here's what I would say to your listeners. So we all kind of are in these 50 states, but state elections really do matter now. And the reason they do is so much federal money is going to the states, you're getting ripped off. And so who the treasurer is, who the controller is, who the attorney general is, whatever, actually does matter a little bit for you because they can stop the fraud in its tracks and save American taxpayers, the entire country money. Like if you look at the amount of fraud just in government, state, local, and federal, what would our real tax rate have to be if we didn't have it?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point and a very important point that so much of the state fraud is money that ultimately flows out of Washington. So people laugh at Minnesota. Oh, those idiots up there, they screwed it up. Ha ha ha. No. That came out of my pocket, and
That's
that came
right.
out of your pocket. So, yeah.
It's terrible. And so, I think like when I looked at running, it took me a long time to decide. It turns out politics is a really ugly business. People lie about you. They just sleep. And I went to an attorney, and I said, "Hey, this is an absolute slander." And he goes, "You're a candidate now. There's nothing you can do about it. But if you were a private citizen, you'd take him to court and you'd win." And I'm like, that's not right, but that's the way it is, And so you have to deal with that. And that stops a lot of people like us from running because, you're not used to that. And you have to, I have a thick skin, but like and I don't mind people drawing distinctions in where it's right, but when you outright slander somebody, which is what's been happening in my race, because my opponent doesn't have any skill. And that's the way he's run every single race that he's ever run. Nobody's ever hit back, and I'm hitting back, but I'm hitting back with facts. So my opponent believes in ranked choice voting. How can you be a Republican and believe ranked choice voting? My opponent believes in red flag gun laws. How can you be a Republican and do that? My opponent took a PPP loan for an at-home business with no employees and didn't pay it back. What?
Yeah,
Who could do that?
folks, that's called fraud.
Yeah. I mean,
I know that
it's just
Jeff is
horrible.
trying to be polite here, But I don't have to be polite. That's fraud.
The other
So
thing I'm going to clue you guys in on, which should really make Americans mad, is in the 2024 election, in October, well, in August, he put $424,000 into his campaign in $6,600 increments, incurring $13,000 in credit card fees. We uncovered this. It's FEC, it's public stuff. And we're like, where did the money come from? Because he didn't have the net worth to have the money. And I filed an FEC complaint. You can read about it. But in October, so in, then in September, he gets the Young Guns designation from the House. And they send him all kinds of money to try to flip the seat. It's a D plus one district. It was a flippable seat. October 2nd, he sucks $424,400 out of his campaign and pays himself back, leaving his campaign with $60,000 to run the last month, when that money that the House gave him could have gone to other seats in the country to flip. So he was about the 11th closest race, he and there were 10 closer, and so the money could have been allocated differently, and it wasn't, and that cost us seats in the House, which is terrible. And you know, I just don't think people like that should be near taxpayer dollars.
I agree. I agree. And you know,
Absolutely.
even if there wasn't pretty obvious shenanigans there, his lack of credentials, and I'm not a big fan of credentialism.
Yeah.
How about this? How about lack of experience would be concerning to me if I were a citizen of Nevada. I want somebody who's competent, who under as you say, you know, understands how to raise money on the bond market, how to
Right.
manage the state's finances in the most efficient way possible. That's, you
Right.
know,
Not
that
how not
the
how to
nuts
grift
and
not how to
bolts.
grift the taxpayer.
Yeah, that's
It
the nuts and bolts of being the treasurer of the state of Nevada. And
is, and
it sounds like you've got a, you know, you've got the skills to do it. But
we
this
have a
gentleman
very
he's a serial wannabe politician too. So
yeah,
let's he ran for Congress, then he ran, I forgot what which other he ran for Congress and lost, and he ran for.
I think county commissioner and lost.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he, you know, it's sad. But like, we have a fundamental, and you see it on the stump, we have a fundamental disagreement over what the treasurer does. I say it's a technical job where you invest money. So does the state constitution. So does the state legislature. You're the chief investment officer of the state. Everything you do touches money. Even when you sit on the chair of the state infrastructure bank, with the Democrats kind of bankrupted, but you're analyzing projects that are supposed to be net present value positive that pay the bank back so that you can dole out money again to new projects that are net present value positive, and it's a self-fulfilling cycle like a business. He thinks it's a policy position. And he says, you know, you just outsource this stuff. Well, you don't outsource that stuff. You've got a 45 member office, of which some of it is for trade execution. You have to issue debt. You get 10 to 12 appointees yourself. You got to know how to talk to investment bankers, otherwise they're going to eat your lunch, because you're buying treasuries, high grade corporates, agencies, munis, and international debt. And all these different brokers have a book of them, and they're going to try to sell you on it. And we had a treasurer in 2008 in Nevada named Kate Marshall. Kate Marshall bought the bigger number because she didn't understand what the heck she was doing. And she lost the state $50 million in 2008. You know what kind of bond she bought? Lehman Brothers.
Junk.
Lehman
Junk.
Brothers. Because she thought the price was cheap and the yield was high. Of course it was. The market
Yes, it
was telling
was.
you they were junk. And in 2008, the same thing happened to me. Alexis Januilius was treasurer of Illinois. He lost 38% of my daughter's college money. I was invested in US T-bills. He put a real estate wrapper around them. How do you do that? So you can't have an idiot in this job. And it's a very, very technical job. It's the one job in government where the sort of the role defines the person. Where, like, if we were running for a state assembly race against my opponent, people could choose and say, you know, I like his ideas on policy. I like this person's idea on whatever, right? You define the office as a candidate, even at president of the United States. Trump defined that office and what he was going to do. The office didn't define him. And so I think that's a big distinction. Trump actually, you know, appointed me to go to the G7 in 2017 with four other Americans to advise the G7 on artificial intelligence, the future of work, and big data. I was very proud to do that. Where, you know, when people talk about Trump endorsements, he endorses any Republican, you know? And so it's a big, big, big distinction between us. Nevadans have a choice. And I hope they choose me because I do have the experience. I really do want to do this. And it's not like I don't want to be a senator. I don't want to be a governor. I just want to do this because it's where my skill set is and how I can help my state move itself forward. I'm not in it for the money at all. Believe me, I could be retired. If I could hit a golf ball straight, I might not be doing this. Believe me.
Well, we'll
you're talking to somebody who could spin the cover off of a golf ball with you. So I'm going to ask you, I would like you to spend a couple of minutes talking about a larger issue in the United States.
Yeah.
Which is, the unfunded liabilities in many of our states, pension funds and bonds and so on and so forth.
Yes.
We are in a huge, huge hole. And it's not just Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare that is going to possibly bankrupt our country. It's the many states that have unfunded liabilities in the many, many trillions.
Yes, it's absolutely true. So in 2005, I went to an economic club meeting in Chicago. And two Fortune 500 CEOs, one from ITW, and I can't remember the other one, maybe Caterpillar or International Harvester, can't remember, laid out why Illinois was broke in 2005, and it was the pension debt. Illinois pensions are funded at 20%. My dad is on a public pension. He's 92 years old. He was a teacher. My mom, bless her heart, she's passed away, but she was on a public pension. My grandfather was in the Forest Service. He was on a public pension. And we've got these defined benefit pensions, and they bankrupt us, and we just can't afford them anymore. And so we have to figure out a way to get away from it. Defined contribution is the way. Corporations got off this in the 80s, and the governments need to do this. And I've been asked about this on the trail. So if you're, I talked to Scott Walker once. He was governor of Wisconsin. He's a great guy. And I asked him, lousy campaigner, but a very intelligent man. I was having a barbecue with him in my friend's backyard, literally. And we were talking, and I said, what about Wisconsin pensions? And he goes, oh, we're over 80% funded. This is how we do it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And in Nevada, we're about 75%. And we used to be over 80, but because of government creep, we're slipping. And those people, you know, what I would say to government workers is, hey, they work. We've made a promise to them. And so we owe them a pension, but we can change it for all new employees. And maybe there's a creative financial way for people under the age of 40, let's say, that haven't totally planned their life, where you could give them a lump sum payout and issue bonds against it. And the market would forgive you because they know that the future liability is going to be gone. So there's all kinds of ways to do that. But we definitely in this nation, across the nation, have to go to define contribution for government workers all over the country, every state, at every level of government.
You know, it sounds simple when you describe it that way, but the change is radical.
It is.
The public employees unions will fight that tooth and nail.
For sure. For sure. But they'd actually get a better return in the market than they would. But
yeah. I'm not suggesting that they're correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And Social Security too. I mean, that's a long-term fix as well that could be similar. I think today at my blog at jeffreycarter.substack.com, I talked about the new Trump accounts, the Trump IRAs. What a radical departure for 56 million Americans that have no way of saving for retirement. In Nevada, I think it's about 500,000 people or something like that. And it's great because the government will match and get you started. And then the miracle of compound interest works over your lifetime. And so that $1,000 that you get if you match it is worth over $300,000 when you retire, which is a real chunk. So I think Trump has done a great job in this term of figuring out ways to advantage people with opportunity. The baby accounts, the Trump baby accounts were great. I think this Trump IRA is great. And so people need to become more financially literate in Nevada over the last 10 years.
Oh, not just
Nobody has.
Nevada. Not just
Nobody
Nevada.
has. Yeah. But in Nevada, the stats are nobody's gotten more financially literate in the last 10 years. And it's because we use NGOs, nonprofits, all this crap to try to educate people when we have technology like artificial intelligence, which allows teachers to help kids learn at their own pace. I mean, there's all kinds of things we can do differently and raise the level of it. But the beauty of compound interest is something people need to really understand.
The problem is you have a media and others that are out to destroy Donald Trump and really to destroy America.
They
So,
are.
and so that is a, that's a thorny issue, is that it's not just disagreeing with an opponent or a different political party on policy or the implementation of policy. How do you reconcile a group of people who are fundamentally consider you and what you stand for as evil, and the nation itself as evil?
They
And how are
do.
we to, we how are we to coexist with that, so to speak? And you can't. It's
It's a
us. It
conundrum.
really is us or them.
And to me, when I lived in Chicago, I was an out of the closet Republican. And my kids, I raised them in the city in the latter part of their life. We moved to the city when one was fifth grade, one was seventh grade. And we went to this Tony private school, Francis Parker School. And I would say the top five Obama fundraisers went to my school. It was a very, call it left of center population. And that was in, let's say, 2003 to 2013. I really understand where those people are coming from, as far as their hate for America. It's a warped view of the world. And it's only gotten worse. When I raised my first venture capital fund in 2015, I actually had an investor look at me, a potential investor who wanted to do a deal with me. He wanted to do all this stuff. I sent him the paperwork. And then I was like, "You didn't sign the paperwork." He goes, "I can't invest in a Republican." And I was like flabbergasted. I'm like, "What, are you crazy? I thought this was about making money, And that's the way they think. And what we have to do is marginalize them by winning elections and throwing them out. And the Democrats need to clean house. So, I know Rahm Emanuel, we're not going to agree politically on much, but he is telling his party that they are off base. And the party has moved so far to the left. Even in Nevada, the Democrats that are running and winning are Democratic socialists. The governor candidate, Aaron Ford, is a Democratic socialist. We have to beat those people. And the only way to beat them, Republicans, is turn out, bank your votes. You got to get active. You got to talk about this stuff and tell people. And there are people that aren't going to agree. And then there's the Democrats that are kind of persuadable, centrist Democrats, that are in sort of a confirmation bias bubble, and you have to break them out of that somehow, almost deprogramming. And you can do it, but it takes some time and it takes some gentle persuasion.
And I got to say, one of my favorite people to talk about, Jeff, is, and I used to call him Lumpy, Senator John Fetterman from Pennsylvania. And he today came out in no uncertain terms and just ripped his party a new one for being openly anti-Semitic. And, it's just, God bless him for that. And he's supported President Trump, whatever one thinks about the war with Iran. He has supported President Trump on that. And a bunch of other things, and it's sort of a head scratcher. You wonder, what he's thinking. But I mean, who knows? But thank God,
I
one
love
thing.
I love him speaking out about that. I traded at the Mercantile Exchange, and of course, a lot of my friends were Jewish. Some of them, their parents escaped from the Holocaust. Leo Melamed was a great mentor of mine. He invented financial futures, and Leo, as a boy, was in Bialystok, Poland, and his mom and dad got out, and his family was murdered. And then I was on the board of the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, and
Yeah, I
I was
noticed
on
that.
that.
But by the way, folks, go see the World War II Museum in New Orleans. It's the
It is
only
great.
reason
It
to go
is
to
a
New
great
Orleans except
place.
for the food. It's a fantastic museum.
It really is. I have been there, yeah.
It's the number
Go
one
ahead,
tourist
Jeff.
attraction there. And it was an honor to be on that board. I was on the board from 09 to 16. I met so many people, the Doolittle Raiders and Walt Ehlers, who was in the first wave at Omaha Beach,
Yes,
got
and
the
he
Medal of
lost his
Honor.
brother Roland. Yeah, so I
Yes,
know the Walt Ehlers story.
he was a great friend of mine. I just dearly miss Walt. He was such a good man. And but I met this guy on our board named Mark Rubin. And Mark was a boy in one of the Auschwitz satellite camps when it was liberated by the Russians. And he came to America and he created the Inland Empire in California and did really well for himself and his family. And he was such a nice man. I just loved him. And he said, when they tell you they're going to come after you should believe them. And I think when you look at what happened to Charlie Kirk, when you look at what is happening to violence all over the country, now you've got people in Brooklyn Heights targeting Jewish, Orthodox Jewish homes. You
Yep,
got to
I love
believe
it.
them.
Well, it's the Crown Heights riot again. This is 37 years later. Hello. And yet Al Sharpton has a prominent position on Banjo Boy and Mitzi Baryshnikov, his wife's
That's right.
show on MSLSD. So go
That's
figure that
right.
one out.
Yeah, I don't get it. And we can have honest political disagreements. By God, back in the 80s and 90s, I certainly had them with Democrats. But I got along with Dan Rostenkowski. He was chairman of Ways and Means. And we used to work with his staff when I was on the PAC at the Mercantile Exchange. And we had political differences, but we could work with each other. And that's just not the case. How do you work with a communist? There's no negotiating with a communist. And that's kind of where they're at. And it sounds radical to say, but the facts are pretty clear.
It's very interesting what you were talking about, because the confluence of finance and politics to me is very interesting. A financially ignorant country is much more easily fooled by the allure of communism, the allure of socialism.
For sure.
So, when we stop teaching, the joys of compound interest to kids in high school, they look at their Social Security statement and they think, "Oh, I'm going to get $1,812 a month for the rest of my life when I retire at 67." But what they
Yes.
don't understand is that if they had taken that money and invested it themselves, they'd be getting, $7,800 a month or whatever the multiple is. Because as most intelligent people know, Social Security isn't a very good investment.
No, that's absolutely right. And I would add to that, to bring it full circle, these teachers are demonizing and the press demonizing billionaires. And when I was growing up, it was like how my whole focus, and my wife and I joke about this because we met in college and we were playing cards one day and she's like, "What do you want to do with your life?" And I said, "Well, I want to get into a job where I can make a lot of money." And she's like, "Really?" And I go, "Yeah." We just started talking about it. And you look at entrepreneurs, they take so much risk and they create so much value for people. I respect the heck out of them. And then it goes down to small business people too. They take risk and they're creating value for people where people are willing to part with their dollars, free exchange to get their solution to their problems. And it's what makes America go around. And it has since we were founded, And so it's really critically important to me to change the conversation about that. And I think it starts at the top. We don't demonize billionaires anymore. And then we won't demonize millionaires. And then we won't demonize small business people because they create value for people and they take risk. And that's what America's all about.
Yep, and
So,
it also starts in the schools too. That's where they learn
do
them.
you go absolutely apoplectic with rage when you hear the term paying his fair share?
Yes.
I hear that, and any human being who spouts that bullshit is immediately on my shit list.
I hate it. I'll
Elon
tell you a funny.
Musk has to pay his fair share. Elon Musk pays more taxes than
Yes.
anyone on the planet.
Yes.
What is
Yes.
his fair share more than that? It's
That
unbelievable to me.
that's a so that's I got my MBA at the University of Chicago. One of the first things you learn is positive versus normative economics. Positive is based on objective data. Normative is, do you pay your fair share? And it's
And then,
an
of course, someone like Bernie Sand and then someone like Bernie Sanders owns 6 multi-million dollar ski mansions in Vermont, but somehow He doesn't get blasted for that, does he?
Yeah, I'm sure those are communes. So, you know, I mean, taxes drive me crazy. I mean, we all pay them, but like, I'll just tell you a funny trading story. So, in the commodity world, you pay your tax on the close of business December 31st, right? So, whatever your open positions are, you pay tax on it. And then January 1st hits and the market opens and they go where they go. So, I had this position, I was short a bunch of stuff and I had a big profit in them. And so, December 31st, I had to pay tax on that profit. January 1st opens, it goes lock limit against me for like 3 or 4 days. I lose two-thirds of my profit, but I
Oh,
still own the
man.
tax, you know? And so what's my fair share, right? And
And
so that
meanwhile, you
just
want to
drives me
have people
crazy.
that, I'm sorry, Jeff, they're pushing for this insane rule of paying taxes on unrealized
Oh,
earnings.
you want to destroy America? Do that.
What the actual, yes, I'm going to make $10 trillion in the next 5 years. So here, own my house. But
Yeah,
meanwhile, I'll die a pauper. But
well, do I get a
I
tax
feel.
credit for unrealized loss?
No,
Yeah, really?
yeah,
No,
that
of
you
course
don't. No, and you know, and so the thing is, you will kill the venture capital industry. Nobody likes private equity, but frankly, it does a lot more good than it does bad. And you'll kill that industry. You will kill the stock market. The real way to do it, I was an advisor to the fairtax.org people. It's repeal the 16th Amendment, go to one sales tax across America on all new goods and services. And that tax, if you got rid of all the fraud, would probably be around 8 or 9%. Stephen Moore was there for a while, but he realizes that a flat tax is easier, but the flat tax can be manipulated. So, but that's how we have to start thinking about it. But it's a really tough political fight and a really tough educational hurdle. So it'll probably never get done. But that would be the best for all Americans.
One of the things that really bothers me, have you noticed that a lot of things really bother me?
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
That's why I'm running for office.
But one of the things that really bothers me is the idea that people shouldn't pay tax below a certain income. I think that is a huge, huge mistake for our culture. It will have very, very little financial effect, for our governments, but it'll have a huge cultural effect if everybody pays tax. And I mean on the first penny of income.
Yeah,
You make 10 bucks as a paper delivery boy, you should pay 1%. But just so that you understand
I
what is
might not
going
agree
on.
with you on that one. I might not agree with that. I'm a big fan of the earned income tax credit because poor people need a base to get ahead. But we could talk about that. I mean,
Okay.
I might not be there.
No, that's fine.
Milton Friedman was a big fan of the earned income tax credit. I kind of think he's right about a lot of stuff. And so that's kind of where I am on that. I think poor people need a chance to get ahead. And the way to do that is the policies that Republicans really push. School choice is one thing, right? It changes your total view on the world. It gives you hope. It gives you a chance. I think truly we have eliminated racism in this country. Everybody has an opportunity. And in the world that I see in the next 10 to 15 years with the way technology is moving, everybody's going to have even more opportunity they didn't in the past. And it's going to be so great for America if we let it.
Well put.
Who is this we? Who is this we talk
Yeah,
about?
we.
If the communist socialists don't assassinate and/or round us all up and put us in the camps that they accuse us of putting them in.
Yes.
There you
Yeah, and
have it.
that's not a
Yes.
joke.
So
That
I
is
know
not a joke.
that Jeff is on a schedule for today, so we're going to wrap this up in a few minutes. But I would like to return to the campaign for treasurer of the state of Nevada. I've made my preference clear. I think it's even if I didn't know Jeff, I would have looked at this and said, "Oh yeah, give it to the guy with some competence in the position." That makes a lot of sense. But you say it's a not is it a nonpartisan position?
It should be about return on assets, not return on virtue. The Democrat that's in office now has made it about return on virtue. He's hurt returns. If you like, it's a $12 billion portfolio, right? If you can move the needle by 0.25%, you make $30 million for Nevada taxpayers, which takes pressure off of raising taxes and fees. I found identified a way to do 0.20 just by looking at the portfolio, which isn't really transparent if I could do it. I think the other thing that Nevadans have to ask themselves is like, who can do this job? And on the Republican side, who can win in November? I raised 30x my opponent in the first quarter as a first-time candidate. And I outraised both Democrats by 2x and 4x. And so to be competitive, you have to have money. We all hate money in politics, but frankly, money talks and bullshit walks. And so the voters spoke on him the last two times. The donors are speaking this time. And for people around the country, just go to jeffcarternv.com. All the money that I raise goes to digital. It doesn't go in my pocket. It doesn't go to salaries. It doesn't go to overhead. It all goes to name ID and digital. And it's amazing what you can do with that today. And even if people send like $100 in, it makes a huge difference. It does. And we're in the last stretches of the campaign. We've done some digital ad buys, but there's a lot more we could do if we raise money. And I've raised since my report, I think I've raised $20,000 or $30,000 more. And so we continue to do that.
Is it, do you think it's
Wonderful.
more efficient to run a digital campaign?
It absolutely is because you can target voters. People put billboards up, and there's a guy in Atlanta, Ted Wright, who wrote a book called Fizz, about word of mouth marketing and stuff. And digital campaigns are just so much more efficient. If you have the money to do a lot of the other fluffy stuff, then you can do it. But like for instance, yard signs in a yard have more social proof than something just on the side of the road. So if you see your neighbor with a yard sign, you're going to go, oh, my neighbor's supporting that person. That's more social proof than if you're driving down a road and see somebody's name.
And no frisbees, no t-shirts, no bumper stickers,
No,
no
we got
beer cozzies.
no, just good old
Key
fashioned digital
chain.
marketing.
There you go. We'll take it.
But that's all we really can afford. We raised $227,000 in the first quarter. I declared on January 10th. I started raising on the 11th. My opponent raised $7,000. And so that's all we can afford. It's not a Senate race or a governor's race where there's just gobs of outside money coming in. And the treasurer's race is the hardest one to raise money for because if you're in finance, you're limited. You can't send any money in. Like you're conflicted. You can send $250. That's it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's actually not a bad rule.
No, I don't think it's bad, but I think it's up to the candidate to raise. I've put my own money in the race. I look at it as a startup investment. So I put about $70,000 of my own cash in the race. I'm not going to get it
Wow.
back, but whatever. It's just the thing. And I guess my opponent characterizes me as a failed investor, but I did pretty well in startups. I had one exit a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not bragging. It's a fact. I invested in 2014 at a $7 million valuation. It sold for $550 million. A year ago, I invested in Simple Mills at about a $7 million, and it exited at $795 million. And I traded my own money on the floor against the biggest banks in the world successfully, where 9 out of 10 people failed. Helped take the Mercantile Exchange public. It was the best IPO other than Google. It was worth $100 million when I joined the board. It's worth over $100 billion, and it's the largest exchange in the world. When more money flies through that place in one day than the New York Stock Exchange does in a year. So, I mean, whatever. I guess people can call that failure if they want, but I think it's probably pretty successful.
I should only fail like you, my friend.
Yeah.
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 I wish we had more time. I would ask you to give a 5 minute explanation of why oil costs the same in coming out of a out of a well in Texas as it does coming out of a well on the north side of the Gulf.
Yeah,
But
we can
that's a
do
that's
that.
a
We can do
yeah.
that, but I'm going to tell you where to go for that. There's a professor at the University of Houston. His name is Craig Perrong, and he writes a blog called The Streetwise Professor, streetwiseprofessor.com. And he is an expert on oil markets, and I'll bet he's written about it.
Streetwise
Okay.
professor. Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we are going to wrap this up. We have been chatting with Jeff Carter, who is the candidate, the better candidate for the position of treasurer of the state of Nevada. I hope any of you Nevada residents who are planning on voting, and I hope all of you are, will vote for Mr. Carter. I think that he has made it clear that he is the choice. And of course, all of you California residents who vote in Nevada also can go vote for Jeff Carter. Folks, that's a joke. That's a joke. Don't do that.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, Jeff, thank you very much for joining us. I know you have a busy day ahead of you, and I really appreciate the time that you've taken out of it to chat with us. Sefton?
No, it's been a pleasure. Yes. I love this. I love your podcast. I've been listening to it for a long time. So
wow.
This is an honor to be on it. It's like so fun to actually talk to you guys. I've been following you guys forever. And I just want to know in Wisconsin how much brandy you're drinking now, because they drink more brandy than anybody else in the world.
We do. I must admit, I do not drink. I'm really not that much of an alky these days. My preference goes to wine. Really, we do drink quite a bit of wine here at the Sefton household, and I have to watch my alcohol intake anyway, just because of gout and other health issues.
Yeah,
but other than that, yes, we don't not much. We don't really drink much brandy. Right. Interesting.
That's a fun fact.
I didn't know.
And don't become a Packer fan like my son-in-law. My son-in-law is raising my grandsons in Whitefish Bay as Packer fans, and it just kills me as a Bears fan.
So. No, I'm not a. I must say. Well, my dad grew up on the south side of Chicago, the baddest part of town. So he was always a Bear fan until he moved to New York. And then, but other than that, and I haven't watched really professional sports, obviously, since the whole thing went woke and insane with the kneeling and everything else and that other garbage. But anyway.
Well, speaking of financial failures on the municipal level, look what's happening to the Bears. They're probably going to go to Indiana.
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Dick Dishyswa owned Arlington Park, and I had lunch with him and persuaded him to join the World War II Museum Board. He's passed away. That's amazing how that's all gone down. And, you know, again, it goes to the grifting class trying to suck as much money out of the Bears as they can. Arlington would be a great place for that stadium in Chicago, and it would create so much opportunity and economic value. But, you know, and the Bears are paying for it. You know, they're not asking for the taxpayers to pay for it.
Amazing stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sefton, take it away.
Jeff Carter for treasurer of the great state of Nevada. Please, please, please. And if Mo Green or is out there, and Fredo, please make sure you whip up the vote. I'm kidding. My goodness. But seriously, Jeff Carter, all the best, my friend. You are a voice of sanity, and we are so honored to have you here. And please, Nevadans, get out and vote, do your thing, and make your state as wonderful as we know it is, and really can be even more wonderfuler than it can be if Jeff is in office and guiding the helm there of the Treasury. And hopefully we'll have more folks like you running for office, anything from dog catcher all the way up, because we need to get rid of the socialists. So, and to our listeners, God bless you all for your wonderful support, and with the tip jar and everywhere else. And throw Jeff Carter at Nevada some love as well for this election. And we will see you again on the next one.
Great Folks, to be with you guys.
Fantastic. Once again,
thank
Jeff
you.
CarterNV.com if you have any questions about his candidacy. And folks, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.